Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, excellencies, colleagues. On behalf of my co-chair, Ambassador Macharia Kamau of Kenya, and myself, very warm welcome to all of you, and welcome back to the chamber. I hope you could use in a very interesting manner the suddenly freed first half of the day for the best of the consideration of the item at hand. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I call to order the seventh meeting of the seventh session of the Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals. This afternoon, in accordance with our program of work, we will begin our consideration of climate change and disaster risk reduction. We will first listen to our keynote speakers, followed by a general interactive exchange of views on these issues. Our first keynote speaker this afternoon is Mr. Andrew Steer, President of and CEO of the World Resource Institute. Mr. Steer has experience in international development, including in Asia and Africa, with previous senior posts at the World Bank and the United Kingdom's government's Department of International Development. Most recently, he was the bank's special envoy for climate change. He was educated at St. Andrews University, Scotland, the University of Pennsylvania, and the Cambridge University. He has a PhD in economics and has written widely on sustainable development issues. Before offering directly the floor to Mr. Steer, let me throw to the floor some questions for your considerations. And this question could be addressed by our speakers as well. Since climate change is one of the big game changers, what we have at hand, which will absolutely have a direct influence on the conditions of development we are trying to figure out for the future. My question to you would be to try addressing how you would like to capture climate change issues in terms of set of goals and targets. Your advice, your guidance will be very valuable how to move forward in the months to come. So having said that, Mr. Steer, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Chair. It's a great honour for me to be here with this distinguished group. The task before you is huge, it is important, and I commend you for facing frontally some of the really tricky challenges, such as how to integrate climate change. What is clear, I believe, to everybody in this room is that if you care about poverty reduction, if you care about development progress, you must care in today's world about climate change because it deeply threatens us. Let me also say that institutes like the World Resources Institute that I have the privilege of overseeing, and also Professor Pan's Institute, for example, I mean, one of the roles we can play is to listen to you and try and tailor the work that we do, the research we do, the papers we write, to be helpful to you. So I look forward to the discussion today, I will just make a few remarks now and show a few slides. I want to talk, first of all, about the why of integrating climate change, and then a word about the how of doing it. It's important that we start, especially if we come from an environmental perspective, with the progress that has occurred in the last 20 years. I think everybody here knows that poverty has been halved. Real per capita incomes in developing countries have doubled. 2 billion have got access to clean water. These are wonderful achievements, and people in this room should recognize them and be proud of them. But the plain fact of the matter is, these gains are threatened. This comes from Peru's Human Development Report, and similar statements are found in many Human Development Reports, that the improvement that we've enjoyed in development progress could be erased due to climate change. I picked Peru because Peru is going to be hosting a meeting later on this year. Turns out that Peru estimates in this report that the impact of climate change on its economy could be between 8% and 34%. And already Peru has lost 40% of its tropical glaciers, which are absolutely central to its economy and its water supply. Now, look, there are four ways in which climate change affects development, four paths through which it affects development, and often these effects interact with each other to create a deadly cocktail, almost a Molotov cocktail that can blow up and can undermine development. First, obviously, climate change. 13 of the hottest years on record have been since 1998. Second, sea level rise. Everyone's aware of that. Scientists suggest that somewhere between 2 and 7 feet increase in sea level will occur this century under present patterns, threatening hundreds of millions of people in cities and obviously people in low-lying islands as well. The third way that climate change impacts development is through extreme weather events, which will become and are becoming already more extreme. 95% of all deaths from natural disasters are in developing countries. And finally, in some ways the cruelest of all, shifts in the hydrological cycle, where water used to fall in a reliable way, it will now fall in an unreliable way. In some areas we'll get too much water, and some areas we'll get too little. So what happens when these different impacts interact with each other? Well, for example, the rise in temperature and the change in the hydrological cycle will affect agriculture profoundly, especially in tropical areas. You've seen maps like this before, but areas in Africa that have been seeking to raise agricultural productivity will, all other things being equal, have lower productivity by up to 30 or 40%. With very, very serious consequences. So too, if you live in a city and sea level rises, but not only that, you get extreme weather events like storm surges, you have massive numbers of people that are affected. The blue numbers there are the millions of people in these cities that are very acutely threatened by rising sea levels, to the extent to which their homes are flooded, they have to move. And of course, this doesn't show what's even more dramatic, which is the low-lying small island states, of course. So that's all the bad news. It's a massive threat. If we aren't willing to face up to it, then we can't claim we're being serious in thinking through development challenges. The good news is that, in fact, we should have been thinking about issues of resilience all the time. This is a picture of Bangladesh, which is one of the leading countries in the world with regard to thinking through how to make their development more resilient. The Bangladesh Disaster Management Plan is one of the most thorough in the world. And because of the good job they've done, because of the fact that they've thought through how to bring resilience into their development, a typhoon that would have killed and did kill 140,000 people in 1990 would today kill less than 4,000. Now, that would be a good idea to include issues of resilience through development all the time. Our development endeavors have tended to focus on average outcomes without taking into account that, in fact, you have to worry about the ups and downs. Well, now with climate change, we have no excuse. In fact, development outcomes were always going up and down. Now they're going up and down much, much more extremely. And so the idea of building resilience or adaptation into development is more urgent than ever. Another piece of good news is that every year that passes, we're discovering that actually low-carbon development is a very, very important and even essential way of getting to the development goals we want. Nowhere illustrates that more than cities and transportation. Many cities around the world today are losing 10% of their GDP because of congestion because of the lack of public transportation. Well, it turns out moving to public transportation, and especially simple, cost-effective ways such as this, bus rapid transit, makes the city more productive, more economically viable, it's pro-poor, and it's extremely good for climate change. And so, too, we could go through lots of examples. Here's a very dramatic one. The World Resources Institute has recently mapped 2 billion hectares in the world of deforested area that is today unproductive. That's twice the size of China. Now, it turns out that if you were to invest in a restoration program, this has fabulous rates of economic return. It's very good for the poor. It's extremely good for food security. And it sequesters carbon, which up there in the sky is a very bad thing, and down here on Earth is actually a very good thing, because it gives you more resilience, it gives you better yields. And so I've put there a little arrow to Niger, just as an example. Niger is a country which has invested in regreening and had really magnificent results. So an area during a flood, an area that had been regreened, whilst other areas in neighboring countries, were suffering from food shortages, where they had regreened, they actually had a surplus. So these are examples of very positive things, and this is what we need to do with the three subjects we're looking at today, is to really look for that sweet spot between development, climate, and disaster risk. Disaster risk reduction is really adaptation or resilience. And we're obviously at a pivotal point here leading up to 2015. For very good and understandable reasons, we have 4 separate processes that are ongoing. The one that we're considering here today is the post-2015 development framework. But obviously, the next phase of the Hyogo framework on disaster risk management is also coming along next year. The conference on financing for development, and obviously, overwhelmingly important, the UNFCCC negotiations. Now, because we have these 4 processes doesn't mean that we have to ignore the effect of one on the other. So obviously, what we don't want to do in the SDGs is to renegotiate climate change. That would be foolish. But we do want to take climate change into account in the SDGs. So I want to just suggest now a word about the how we might do it. First, we need what you could call a storyline, which is, if you like, a sort of an understanding of what the relationship is. And that needs to be written down clearly to inspire all of us to act differently. Second, obviously, in the goals and targets. And third, in implementation. I'm going to talk primarily, because I have a limited time, on the first and the second, and especially on the second. What we need in a storyline is a real explicit statement connecting development and climate change in the chapeau text, if you like. This is absolutely essential. It needs to do a couple of things. It needs to recognize the urgency. There's lots of ways of doing it. But the cruel arithmetic is clear. The IPCC has laid it out very clearly. We took 200 years to use half of the world's carbon budget, and we're currently on a path to use the other half in just 30 years. And once we go over that carbon budget, we are beyond the 2 degrees, and we have catastrophic impacts on development. It turns out that to stay within 2 degrees of warming, and remember, that's for Americans, that's 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, we need to peak world emissions. So we need a statement that lays out just how urgent it really is. But then we need a statement that talks about not only the scale of the challenge and the urgency, but also the fact that there are issues of equity and justice here. We need to tackle the disproportionate impacts on the poorest. We need to talk about the need to share action fairly. We need to ensure access to transformational technologies. And we need to address intergenerational equity. One of the things that we do at the World Resources Institute is work with the Mary Robinson Foundation on a really important initiative called the Climate Justice Dialogue, where we're really trying to rescue this concept of justice or equity. Some of us were there when the Climate Change Convention was signed at the original Rio, and we saw a real sense of moral purpose, and issues of equity and justice were driving action and boldness. Sadly, more recently, issues of equity have, if you like, disempowered the process. So we're really trying to sort of work together with countries to try and rescue that idea. I want to talk finally about goals and targets. And here, obviously, views differ. And let me make a sort of simple point here. The Sustainable Development Goals need to reflect development and climate linkages within individual targets. I don't want to make a case to you that there needs to be a special goal or even standalone targets on climate change. I want to make a point to you that the goals in each of the elements need to reflect climate change, both the adaptation side of it and the mitigation side of it. So let me give you an example. Suppose the goal is secure, sustainable energy. Now, there's a whole number of targets that have been suggested. I just took sort of some that, you know, one reads in various reports, and they're all good. Now, here's what we need to do. We need to look through these, and we need to say which ones of these would really help us make sure that we integrate climate into it. So, for example, doubling the share of renewable energy in the global energy mix. That would be extremely good for poverty reduction. It'd also be extremely good for climate. So, too, double the global rate of improvement in energy efficiency, which is one of the Sustainable Energy for All goals that was discussed at Rio Plus 20. Similarly, phasing out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. The IMF recently told us that $2 trillion are used each year to subsidize energy. This would be good for the poor because it releases money that would be good for all kinds of other programs. It would, especially if the poor were compensated through cash compensation, but it would also be very good for climate change. Let me give you another example. Food and nutritional security for all. Let's imagine that you choose this as one of the goals, for example. What would be some of the targets? Well, here's a list of them. I won't go through them all. You've seen targets like this often. I've just taken them out of various proposals that have been made. Now, some of these, again, really reflect a climate change. For example, reducing the rate of food loss and waste by 50%. Turns out that one-third of all the food in the world by volume and one-quarter by nutritional value is lost. Now, that's bad for everybody. It's bad for the poor because it drives up food prices. It's bad for food security, but it's very bad for climate change. Why? Because agriculture accounts for about 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. So reducing the rate of food loss and waste would be one of those win-win-wins. And we need to be looking for those. Let me give you another example. I mean, universal access to climate and disaster information. That is extremely important. Weather forecasting, early warning of extreme weather events, extremely important for poverty reduction, but also absolutely vital, as we just saw in the case of Bangladesh, absolutely vital for adaptation. And so we could go through. Here's one on water efficiency, for example, another win-win. Here's one on regreening, the kind of evergreen agriculture. Turns out that by doing things differently, one can double the yields, one can get more resilience, and one can sequester carbon from the sky into the soil. So this is the approach. Let me give you one other example. Consider cities. I know earlier this week we had a very good discussion on cities. What are some of the targets that you could have in cities? Some of them have very specific links with climate change, which would help enormously address both poverty reduction and climate change. So, for example, ensure universal access to basic urban services. Halve average commuter times. Do you know if we could halve commuter times, especially for the poor, but actually for everybody, we would massively increase economic productivity and we would hugely influence for the better climate change. So too, transport-related air pollution. Some of the countries represented in this room today have citizens who are losing 5 years of their lives because of air pollution. That's a bad thing. Air pollution is caused by too much consumption of carbon for the most part, especially coal. And so finally, let's just imagine you chose to have a goal on a global partnership for development. Now, embedded in that, there are all kinds of ideas. An open and fair trading system, for example. But why not explicitly include one under the global partnership that would hold the increase in global average temperatures below catastrophic levels. Now, you might say, well, you don't need that because that's going to be negotiated under UNFCCC. And, of course, in Cancun 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the negotiators already agreed to a two-degree limit. So why would you want to bring it into the Sustainable Development Goals? Well, let me suggest humbly that one of the reasons is it would remind us, especially those who are responsible for development, especially those of us that have to think about reducing poverty and bringing infrastructure and doing all the things that development is about, it would remind us how central climate change is. And this would be extremely valuable. And so, too, for example, we could have one on the need to integrate strategies for climate change and development. Most governments, most institutions separate them today. We need to be much more creative about how we put climate to the service of development and vice versa. In closing, let me just tell you one word about the Independent Research Forum that Professor Pan and I both are part of. It is a group that we've put together of 11 independent research partners from developing countries, emerging countries, from OECD countries. And the purpose is to serve this process. So I want to end the way I started, to say that, you know, what we would like to do is do the kind of work, the kind of analysis that would help you get to where you want to get to. And so this group prepares papers, research, we convene meetings, and so we simply want to offer you our wholehearted support. Thank you very much.
I thank Dr. Steer for his very interesting statement. And now I'd like to offer the floor to our second keynote speaker, who will be Professor Jiahua Pan, Director of the Institute for Urban and Environmental Studies at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. He is a professor of economics. Absolutely. He's a professor of economics at the Academy's Graduate School. Professor Pan holds a PhD from Cambridge University. His areas of interest include the economics of sustainable development, energy and climate policy, world economy, and environmental and natural resource economies. He has been a lead author of the IPCC Working Group 3, third and fourth assessment reports, a member of the Chinese National Expert Panel on Climate Change, advisor to the Minister of Environmental Protection, and vice president of the Chinese Society of Ecological Economists. Professor, now the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Andrew has talked most of it. There is little room left for me to talk. But anyway, he talked about why and how. Probably my focus will be on what. Climate change is part of sustainable development, probably the most important part, as Andrew has demonstrated, is right at the center of sustainable development, not only in the longer term, but also in the short term as well, because of its connections. What I'm going to talk is somewhat more technical about the goals for inclusion in the setting of SDGs. Under the FCCC process, the climate goal has been negotiated and set in a legal framework. Article 2 of the convention clearly specifies the objective as stabilization of GHG concentrations in the atmosphere at a level that would prevent dangerous anthropogenic interference with the climate system. the goal had been further agreed upon as the control of temperature increase within 2 degrees Celsius and a possibility to look at within 1.5 degrees in the Copenhagen Accord and the subsequent documents. However, the implementation of such goal consensus has not been reached. Some parties advocate a responsibility-based approach, where others emphasize different elements such as grandfathering, ability, development, and the combination of all the principles. In terms of emission reduction, the legal terms are selected very carefully. Some parties deliberately avoid the use of commitments, which is legally binding. Some choose pledges or even weaker term like contributions. For developing country parties, mitigation actions are very well accepted. On the other hand, climate goal is not simply mitigation. There are other equally important targets as well, including adaptation, finance, and technologies. The indicators used in the climate negotiation include temperature increase, GHG concentration level in the atmosphere, emission budget control, percentage reduction of emissions, and per unit of GDP emission reductions. Adaptation targets are often associated with capacity building and finance. In the Copenhagen Accord, a target was agreed to reach $30 billion between 2009 and 2012 and up to $100 billion in 2020 per year. International cooperation is included as policies and measures for implementation. The IPCC scientific assessment considers stabilization scenarios for meeting climate goals. If possibilities are set at 33%, 50%, and 60% below 2 degrees in 2100 as compared to 1861 to 1880, budgetable total emission would be 1,550, 1,210, and 1,000 gigatons of carbon. Up to 2011, 533 gigatons of carbon have already been emitted to the atmosphere, and the total budgetable emissions between 2012 and 2100 would be 1,029. 679 and 469 gigatons of carbon only. Well, climate change is a development issue. High levels of human development are associated with the high level of income and urbanization, which are closely linked to GHG emissions. In terms of per capita emissions, the industrialized Annex I parties are some 3.5 times the developing non-Annex I parties. Take China as one example. The ranking of Human Development Index, as assessed in the latest UNDP report, China is ranked 101 among some 180 or so countries, just at the medium level. And China's level of urbanization is still lower than the world average. Further urbanization would require more energy consumption. That proves why the Chinese government has been pushing for energy efficiency and low carbon development. For social and economic development, there are different pathways. Some countries have been locked in high carbon technologies, where others do have the choice to go lower carbon approaches. For latecomers like China and India, it is unnecessary and impossible to go a high carbon approach. A climate security would bring about co-benefits with respect to better air quality, higher adaptive capacity to reduce ecological degradation, and to address climate extremes, and of course, energy security. Severe air pollution in China is largely attributable to increased amount of fossil fuel combustion. Eutrophication would damage biodiversity and deteriorate water quality. Mitigation of climate change would increase the level of urban resilience. Climate change is a challenge to sustainable development, which would require a shift of development paradigm. Industrialism has helped accumulate material wealth, but increasing social, economic, and environmental concerns call for a rethinking of the prevailing industrial civilization. In terms of social development, inequality and poverty seem to be part of the system. We have economic growth, but we have no solutions to economic and financial crises. There have been increasing environmental concerns, such as environmental pollution, depletion of natural resources, and ecological degradation, and of course, climate change. The existing institutions are functioning, but care more for capital, less or even no for people and the environment. All this would indicate that there is a need to move away from industrial civilization. Under industrial civilization, the ethical foundation is simply utilitarian. So long something has a utility, there is a value. Otherwise, there is no value. The objective of production is profit maximization without paying attention to negative effects on other people and on our nature. The driver for industrial revolution is technological innovation, which is appreciable. But the energy base for industrialization is fossil fuels, as fossil fuels are exhaustible mineral resources, and their combustion causes environmental damages. We have reason to question the sustainability of industrial civilization. In the frontier economy, geophysical limit is often neglected. The production process is linear from raw material to goods and waste. In a spaceship economy, there is no sufficient room for housing increasing waste and assimilating pollutants. Under an industrial civilization, a dominating consumption style is materialism, characterized by endless pursuit of unhealthy and wasteful material consumption. We need to have a new paradigm for harmony between mind and nature. This is something we may call, in contrast to industrial civilization, ecological civilization. Under ecological civilization, the ethical foundation relies on ecological and social justice, respect for nature instead of conquest nature. Social justice calls for protection of basic human rights instead of inequality and poverty. Under such a new paradigm, we would seek economic, ecological, and social efficiencies. Ecological efficiency implies the natural ecological system is resilient with a high level of natural productivity. Economic efficiency suggests that economic system is characterized by low input, zero emission, and high output. Social efficiency requires that social institutions be well designed and functioning. In this way, we would have harmony with and inclusiveness between mind and nature, between individuals, between production and consumption, economy and society, and among regions. Ultimately, the paradigm ensures sustainability of human development, that is, quality, healthy, and dignified way of living. As I'm from China, you may allow me to share with you some of the experiences in China's green goal making in the development planning process. Large scale of urbanization and industrialization in China is very much constrained by the bottleneck of resource scarcity and the fragile environment. This is why the Chinese government has been pushing for a paradigm shift from conventional industrialism to the construction of ecological civilization. China's new leadership has set the new goals to accelerate such a transformational process. One is to keep the balance of natural resource assets. There is a call for combining the balance sheet of natural resource assets in a similar manner as the national accounting system, so that the balance of natural resource assets can be evaluated and kept as the target. The second is a requirement of development within ecological carrying capacity by setting ecological red lines. The third is internalization of externality by putting a value on natural resources to adjust demand and supply, such as a progressive pricing on resource consumption. In China, the targets are specified and implemented in five-year plans. The making of a five-year plan is not through a centralized top-down approach. Rather, it is based on bottom-up assessments and consultation so that all the targets can be implementable. The indicators are set in two categories, anticipatory and mandatory. Economic indicators are in general anticipatory, but most environmental indicators are in the category of mandatory. For instance, a red line is set to keep arable land non-declining. Energy efficiency, carbon intensity, and forestation targets are all made mandatory. The share of non-fossil fuel over total primary energy consumption is a target for climate mitigation and also for energy security. It is made mandatory. The reduction of conventional pollutants is mandated in absolute terms. The economy can grow, but discharge of chemical oxygen demand and the emission of sulfur dioxide must be cut by 8% by 2015 as compared to the level in 2010. For energy saving, for example, a progressive pricing has been introduced in China to encourage energy saving in the household sector. As the targets are further disaggregated and the policies and measures such as investments are accomplished, the targets are achievable. Climate change goal is fundamental in the SDG framework. Climate sustainability goal is long-term by nature, transformative with no delay, harmonious and inclusive with respect to both development and sustainability. Climate sustainability goal is ethically grounded, and we must ensure that there is no dangerous human interference with the climate system. Climate targets are scientifically based and the actions are made clear. 2 degrees target is not purely a theoretical number. It is interpreted to GHG concentrations in the atmosphere at 450 parts per million. Given the uncertainty nature of climate system, to achieve a 2-degree target at 50% probability level would mean that the entire world would have only a budget of emissions at 679 gigatons of carbon between 2012 and 2100. In order to ensure that the mitigation target is achievable, we need to address the drivers of GHG emissions on the surface of it. Many people look at the secondary drivers, such as population, income, energy intensity, GHG intensity. Many of these drivers are a matter of public choice. Rapid population growth would increase the pressure on nature, but a decrease in population is certainly not a policy goal. GHG intensity is dependent on the structure of the economy, market fluctuations, and energy mix. Therefore, the secondary factors are important, but not the primary driver to take effective actions. Primary drivers normally have a direct impact on mitigation and can be a policy relevant. These factors include consumer behavior, technology, governance, resource availability, infrastructure development, industrialization, and urbanization. Ultimately, the primary drivers are powered by actions such as information provision, R&D, planning, economic incentives, non-climate policies, and direct regulation. For instance, information and incentives would drive the consumer to behave in a low carbon manner. R&D investment would push innovation and the deployment of low carbon technologies. At indicators level, all the targets must be measurable, reportable, and verifiable. When indicators are given at an aggregate level, they should reflect the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities, as different countries vary in national circumstances. For instance, the industrialized parties may use such indicators like emission budgets and percentage reduction in absolute terms, such that they take the lead and demonstrate low carbon production and consumption. For most developing countries, the indicator may be given in percentage intensity reduction. For promoting a paradigm shift, per capita emissions prove a better indicator. Normally, the poor are well below the given budget emission level, and the rich are several times the budgeted emission level. Paradigm shift starts from the rich, leading the process of transformation. If the rich can meet the per capita budget requirement, the poor would have no reason to go over the budgeted level. Of course, some policies can be introduced to push the transformation, such as a progressive pricing of carbon emissions. Thank you for your attention.
Professor Penn, on behalf of the Open Working Group, I would like to ask to thank you for your very inspiring and interesting presentation. And before opening the floor for questions and comments, I'd like to recognize in our presence the Minister of Development of France, Minister Pascal Calfin, and with your concurrence, I'd like to ask him first whether or not he would like to have any reaction on what has been said or maybe his take on the issues which were brought up by the presenters. Minister?
Merci beaucoup pour cette opportunité. I will ask you to put your earphones on. Je voulais évidemment préciser que je m'exprime aujourd'hui au nom de la France, bien sûr, mais aussi de l'Allemagne et de la Suisse. Je voulais remercier les équipes des Nations Unies et les intervenants précédents, tous les deux, pour la qualité de leur intervention, de leur proposition, qui nous donne un aperçu très éclairant du chemin que nous devons et que nous pouvons suivre collectivement. Puisque nous allons parler du climat et des risques, ayons évidemment une pensée pour toutes les victimes de ces risques liés au climat et particulièrement aux victimes aux Philippines liées au récent typhon. Comme vous le savez, et c'est ce qui justifie aussi ma présence ici, la France a une responsabilité particulière sur ce sujet en tant que futur pays qui va accueillir la conférence climat en décembre 2015. Cette conférence devra voir l'adoption d'un nouvel accord ambitieux, applicable à toutes les parties et juridiquement contraignant sur le climat. accord sans lequel nous ne pourrons pas atteindre à temps notre objectif commun de limiter l'augmentation moyenne de la température mondiale à plus de 2 degrés par rapport au niveau pré-industriel, qui est l'objectif qui nous lie tous. Le docteur Pachauri, qui préside le groupement d'experts sur le climat, le GIEC, nous a rappelé en septembre dernier qu'il est minuit moins 5 pour le climat. Minuit moins 5. Nous ne pouvons plus ignorer le constat scientifique présenté dans le cinquième rapport du GIEC. Et ce dernier rapport n'exclut pas une augmentation de la température moyenne allant jusqu'à 5 degrés Celsius. C'est un scénario qui anéantirait la quasi-totalité des gains que nous avons réalisés en matière de développement. Et c'est précisément pour cela qu'il y a une connexion particulière entre les enjeux historiques de développement en matière de santé, en matière de sécurité alimentaire et la question du changement climatique. C'est pour cela qu'il ne nous est plus possible, comme ce fut le cas par le passé, mais il ne nous est plus possible pour l'avenir de concevoir des objectifs de développement sans tenir compte de la question du changement climatique. Et nous devons tracer, c'est notre responsabilité collective, la voie d'un développement compatible avec notre objectif de limiter le réchauffement à plus de 2 degrés Celsius. Nous le savons, nous ne pourrons pas éradiquer la pauvreté et garantir un développement durable à l'humanité sans intégrer dans la définition de notre futur agenda des réponses aux impacts du changement climatique et notamment à l'augmentation des risques de catastrophes. Et ces réponses sont d'autant plus nécessaires, indispensables, que les principales victimes, les premières victimes, seront aussi et surtout les pays les plus pauvres. Faute d'efforts suffisants pour atténuer le changement climatique et pour s'y adapter, ce sont également tous les pays littoraux qui seront confrontés à une hausse du niveau de la mer allant jusqu'à 1 mètre si la température augmente de plus 4 degrés Celsius. Et cette hausse menace tout simplement l'existence même, nous le savons, des petits pays insulaires. La fréquence accrue des catastrophes naturelles menace des vies humaines et compromet les progrès accomplis dans le cadre des objectifs du millénaire pour le développement. Que cela soit par la destruction des habitats, la destruction des infrastructures, par la menace sur la sécurité alimentaire ou par l'accroissement des risques de pandémie et d'insécurité. Nous considérons pour cela que la réduction des risques de catastrophes doit être intégrée dans l'agenda post-2015, notamment en promouvant des politiques adéquates pour renforcer les capacités d'adaptation des sociétés eu égard aux pertes liées au changement climatique. Les politiques de réduction des risques contribuent à l'éradication de la pauvreté et elles contribuent aussi et en même temps à atteindre la durabilité environnementale. La position que nous défendons ici est très claire. Il ne s'agit pas, et Andrew Steer l'a redit également en introduction, il ne s'agit pas de dupliquer ici la négociation climatique. Cela n'aurait aucun sens. La définition d'un objectif qui serait uniquement consacré au changement climatique n'apporterait à nos yeux pas de valeur ajoutée. En revanche, il est indispensable d'introduire des cibles qui répondent à l'enjeu de la maîtrise du changement climatique à plus de 2 degrés. Il en va évidemment de la pertinence de nos futurs objectifs et il en va aussi de notre capacité à atteindre nos engagements en matière climatique. C'est là le cœur de la complémentarité entre, d'un côté, le processus UNFCCC et le processus des objectifs du développement durable. Je pense par exemple à des cibles en matière d'infrastructures résilientes au changement climatique et aux catastrophes naturelles. Je pense par exemple à des cibles en matière d'énergie durable pour tous, incluant le développement des énergies renouvelables, l'amélioration de l'efficacité énergétique. Je pense aussi à des cibles en matière de préservation des sols, en matière de protection des forêts et du milieu marin, à des cibles en ce qui concerne les territoires durables et notamment les villes durables, sujets qui ont été au cœur des discussions des derniers jours. Si nous sommes capables d'avoir cet objectif transversal qui est celui sur lequel la communauté internationale s'est déjà mise d'accord de limiter le changement climatique à plus de degrés et que nous sommes capables de le décliner à travers des cibles en matière urbaine, d'agriculture, de forêt, de climat, d'océan par exemple, nous serons alors dans la totale complémentarité et valeur ajoutée par rapport au processus UNFCCC. Ainsi, nous pourrons à la fois lutter contre le changement climatique, réduire le risque de catastrophe en les traitant de manière transversale et ambitieuse dans l'agenda post-2015. Je crois que c'est notre responsabilité commune et nous avons le cadre, le temps, la possibilité de le faire. Réfléchissons à la responsabilité qui est la nôtre. Nous n'avons pas le droit d'échouer. Je vous remercie.
Thank you very much, Minister. It is very clear. And now I'd like to open the floor for questions, remarks, and comments to be addressed to our two keynote speakers. Let's pay a little bit of time for this interactive part of our deliberations. And now I recognize Pakistan as asking for the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Camera is not correct. Yes, this one is better. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you, Professor Pan, for being here today with us on this very important topic. Let me start with Andrew. Andrew, it's always a pleasure to listen to you. And I am a bit at loss because you have taken nearly 75% of thunder out of the statement that we wanted to make collectively as India, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka. We thought we had cracked this issue. It seems you've been snooping around. I still want to take the ownership of this theory. But why I said 75%, this is where I am, Andrew. You've been looking around. Edges here. This is, yeah. Okay. On The 25%, I should say, is an element that I found missing in your statement or presentation, was how we are going to distinguish the common but differentiated responsibilities in a different segments of the goals and the targets. And I think it's very important to focus on them. Generally, the need for taking climate change as a cross-cutting issue across the spectrum of key goals is something that is a viable way forward in looking at climate change as part of the Sustainable Development Framework. And that is what you have presented, and that is what we believe is the way forward on integrating climate change in the various key areas of Sustainable Development Goals, notably energy, you pointed out. We believe that instead of segmenting different areas such as cities or transport or other, we believe we need to focus on sustainable infrastructure development goal, which get us out of the silos approach that we have been trying to avoid in the case of sustainable development. And for that matter, the rural development, which is not just a question of food security, but also includes development other aspects such as the livelihood development or better agriculture facilities. So in that sense, yes, the climate change, and I'm also responding to the co-chair for his first question, is a way forward, is to look at it as a period, as a matter of targets and as well as indicators. I know we are not focusing on indicators, but various indicators would need to distinguish, and that's where the common but differentiated responsibilities would actually come in, to look at that. My other point, Mr. Chairman, is on the Global Partnership for Development. Thank you again, Andrew, for pointing out some of the targets in that area, although they were a bit more on the thematic side of the debate. What we are looking at, and I think one of the areas that we can together work, both as a group and as a IRF, is the role of partnering with the private sector. That's the missing link in the Global Partnership for Development. We have a model that is now emerging within the United Nations from the Sustainable Energy for All, a model for partnership, a model for looking at how private sector can commit to various actions, and then we promote it through the United Nations framework. I think that aspect needs to become firmly part of the Global Partnership for Development, both not only in the case of resources alone, but also because without the private sector participation, as part of this overarching framework, the challenge of climate change will be impossible to meet. So these are two points I believe that I wanted to highlight, one on the global partnership and the fact that CBDR would remain an important component, and we need to focus on distinguishing between different aspects of goals to link the principle of differentiation in them. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you very much indeed, Farouk, and thank you also for remembering my very adamant question at the beginning. Further questions and comments to our keynote speakers? I'd like to recognize Bangladesh.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Let me also thank Mr. Andrew Steer and Mr. Pen Jiahua for their eminent presentations. This has been indeed very enlightening and informative. I appreciate both of them for emphasizing on the adaptation measures alongside mitigation. As you know, that some degree of change is inevitable, even if you decide to stop CO2 emission tomorrow, which is also not the case. Now, I would draw your attention to a rather strategic issue. Whenever we try to deepen our discussion on climate change here, there seems to be a reticence among many of us. Some views are expressed in the line that climate change is an issue which is technical in nature and are being dealt by a different track in a different intergovernmental process. We shouldn't intervene or prejudge the outcome, that we should wait for COP20, which will be held in Paris in 2015. Some would even say that there is no progress in other fora. How can we expect that we'll have a significant agreement within the framework of sustainable development? Although we are convinced that without robust targets on climate change, I think our ambition to have a sustainable development will remain a far cry. For many of our countries, including Bangladesh, and it has been said, mentioned by our speakers, this is not only a development issue, it is also an existential issue. My question to the speakers is, how feasible do you think to have a standalone goal or sub-goals or a couple of targets on climate change? And if we have so, do you think a strong or ambitious targets could and would help or influence the debates elsewhere? So what do you think it is, its impact? If we can agree on something very strong here, will it influence the debates within, for example, UNFCCC or Hugo Framework Work 2 on the area of disaster reduction? I thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me now turn back to our presenters and asking them what would be their take on the two questions or a couple of questions actually that were posed to them.
Well, thanks very much for those terrific comments. My friend Farooq from Pakistan, I'm glad it was only 25% that I got wrong. That's but I actually agree with your 25%. So I think we're probably in the same place. Look, I think it's terribly important that anything that goes into the Sustainable Development Goals that relates to climate change is totally consistent with the principles that have been understood for some time under the UNFCCC. So your point on common but differentiated is very important. But the targets that I was looking at basically were broadly win-win. In other words, doing it right, doing restoration right, doing climate smart agriculture it shouldn't be a burden. It's an investment in development. These actually have fabulous rates of return. Where there might be trade-offs, you're quite right. In other words, you'll notice that there wasn't something there that said everybody must adopt renewable energy. It's the only way to go. Because there might be some trade-offs in some cases. So I'm totally on your side. And also, I didn't talk about the means of implementation and financing, and obviously that is an absolutely central part under the UNFCCC. I also agree totally with your point on the private sector, by the way. Our friend from Bangladesh, look, how feasible is a standalone goal on climate? That's obviously your competence rather than mine, the political feasibility. As I said in my presentation, I wouldn't come here to strongly urge you to have a standalone goal on climate. I could certainly see that some might feel that could set the entire political process in the wrong direction. What I suggested is that perhaps under a goal relating to the global partnership, one should refer to something that's already agreed. I do think if a target has been set already, that we should limit climate change to 2 degrees, or hopefully 1.5 degrees. I think recognizing that helps get us to the second part of your question, sir, which said, is there a way that those preparing the SDG could help make a greater chance of a good deal in Paris next year? I don't think the role of the SDG working group is to try and get a stronger deal, but I do believe that every Monday morning when a development minister wakes up or an education minister wakes up or an infrastructure minister or citizens in cities when they wake up, they should be thinking about, my goodness me, climate change is a problem. So the moment we haven't had enough ministers, leaders who are responsible for development and poverty reduction, we haven't had enough of them going to bat and saying, for heaven's sake, we have to deal with this issue of climate change, because if we don't, it is impossible for me and my ministry, it's impossible for us to deliver what we need to deliver. So that's what we need to see. And so I think the people in this room who are leaders in the space of sustainable development have a role, not so much at all to interfere with negotiations, but simply to recognize that climate change is important. And within your own governments, we need to sort of have cross-government agreement that climate change has to be dealt with. We now know what it costs. We understand a huge amount about it. We understand that dealing with it is a small cost compared to the benefits of dealing with it. We understand what kind of financial system needs to be put into place. So we now need to get on with it, and we need to be in one place. But I wouldn't suggest is that this group here feels that it should in any way act in a way that seeks to influence directly the negotiations.
Thank you much. Professor Penn?
Good. Well, thank you for the observations and questions. I believe that your points can be part of our presentations. Quite differently from Andrew, I do believe that the SDG discussion can have some positive impacts on climate change negotiation. This is based on two aspects. For one, this SDG negotiation is not as legally binding as the climate change agreement. So this is somewhat, you know, more a political will. And then in this sense, I think that, you know, people may have their will to push the, you know, process further. So in this regard, this would give some indication that, you know, the negotiators on climate change may think about it. So this is one, you know, I think that it would have some positive impact. The second reason is that in the climate change negotiation and assessments by the IPCC, co-benefits are considered very important for climate change negotiation and for climate target setting. And the SDGs, if you look at the individual elements, energy, water, poverty, all these would have tremendous co-benefits for mitigation and adaptation. And then if we have these co-benefits, and then the determination to have more ambitious targets in the climate change mitigation would be feasible. So in this regard, I think that, you know, I would believe the SDGs would have very positive impacts on climate change process. And then with regard to whether we should have a standalone climate change target in the SDG framework, I think it is absolutely necessary. We talk about sustainability. And if climate change is not included, and what are we going to talk about? Sustainability. This is so much central to sustainability. And if you keep it outside of the framework, and then the SDGs themselves cannot stand. So in this regard, it has to be part of it. And of course, on the other hand, we may say that, you know, they do have some, you know, complementarity. But in my understanding, they are not complementary. They are very much integratable. For instance, in the SDGs, you have poverty. And then we can have low carbon approach to poverty alleviation. We can have low carbon, you know, energy for sustainable energy for all. So these are very much, you know, integratable instead of, you know, complementary. And then if we consider these two factors together, and then we do believe that a standalone target for climate change is necessary. And then with regard to CBDR in climate change, you know, targets, they are there already. I think that in my earlier presentation, I indicated that the aggregate terms may not be that useful in terms of, you know, effort making. Because, you know, in some developing countries, their aggregate is not that much. And then if it's a proportional reduction, and then they will have no chance for development. And then for the developed countries, their emission is, you know, very high already. If it's also somewhat, you know, a proportional reduction, still they would have a high per capita emission level. So in this regard, for the developing countries, they must have room for their development in terms of emission requirements. And then we would say that, you know, per capita emissions as an indicator might be more appropriate to reflect the CBDR. And then this is something really very important, even for the developed countries. If the consumers change their behavior, and this would give demonstrate to the latecomers that we have a chance to follow a low carbon way of production and consumption. So CBDR is not only a principle, it is a reality. It can be implemented and reflected. Thank you.
Thank you much, Professor. Before inviting the next question from the floor, I would like to recognize the presence of Margarete Wallström, who is the Special Representative of the Secretary General for Disaster Risk Reduction. And I understand she is going to leave us very soon to meet the Secretary General, but I think it would be a big mistake from my side and maybe an omission from all of us to let her go without hearing her opinion, what is her take on what has been discussed here already.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you. I mean, I think I would join our colleague from Pakistan and say that you've stolen all the thunder already. But I think, you know, what I have heard is that sustainable development is not feasible without recognizing disaster and climate risk. What I've also heard is some reticence to say, then, what do we do with this insight? And I think, Andrew, I'd like in just a few comments, I take my cue for where you started. We should have realized very long time ago that we had to consider resilience all along. Now, why didn't we do that? What are some of the drivers for development, as Professor Dewar also highlight very strongly? So I think, you know, you have already stated the elements necessary for integration, for measuring, for having, and I think I appreciate the thoughts around not about goals, but actually targets and how to measure the targets. I think we, what we from particularly the disaster risk reduction community, what we carry as a message from our very large community in countries around the world and communities, how will disaster risk reduction this time make its way into a serious threat to development into the development agenda? We had a missed opportunity now for the 10 years, and I think that's the messages that you heard coming through. If I hear the French minister correctly, and just the recent speakers, of course, from Bangladesh and Pakistan, we can make this happen now. This recognition that we have enough knowledge, technology, capacity to ensure that the very rapid increase of disaster losses that we see today impact poor countries more than anything, but also have a significant impact also on rich countries, and maybe most of all on middle-income countries with the fastest-growing economy. So that's where the opportunities lie to apply these. I think we should also look at what you have already done, in fact. The Yoga Framework for Action, which we will go in March 2015, to agree on a new Yoga Framework for Action, HFA2, as we call it, actually has always been a development instrument. But with the very rapid increase of disasters, there has been an over-focus on the disaster losses rather than on the preventive knowledge and technology that we have in all sectors to mitigate those. Equally, And the countries are present here in the Cancun Adaptation Framework during the COP17, was it, in Mexico. In fact, you all agreed that the Yoga Framework for Action is a mechanism to build on for adaptation and disaster risk reduction. So the policy base on integrating action is maybe stronger than we think, but underutilized until today. I would say why isn't so much done as could be done, even though I must say in disaster risk reduction there is a rapid evolution of action because the costs are too high. And we see this as a mix of probably two things. One is the lack of integration of all sectors of society. We've already mentioned private sector. It is not possible to tackle these issues with a full engagement of private sector for their own resilience, but also as contributors to overall social and economic resilience. The second one is, and this keeps coming up, is really on institutional mechanism. We haven't aligned the challenges that countries have with the institutions that need to deal with them, certainly not maybe at global level, but also countries have not yet adjusted to what they suffer every day. And we see a positive trend there. I think this community here can help to encourage how to live up to the statements we made everywhere, including in the disaster risk reduction agenda, of an integrated planning of all sectors to identify not only sectoral risks, but also the risks generated by lack of integration in the planning process, where sectors create new risks because they are not better integrated. And my final point is maybe an observation of how we can think about risk, where we are now moving forward. And we could break it down in three different avenues of working, closely aligned, of course. The first one is risk prevention. In fact, what you are discussing here, namely the pursuit of development pathways that actually minimize risk generation, not creating new risks. Secondly, risk reduction, and that's what we've been doing for decades now, taking corrective action to address existing accumulation of disaster risk. That's the one we know best, probably. And thirdly, how to strengthen resilience. And that is, in fact, the actions that enable nations and communities to absorb the loss and damage in a different way, is to deal with external shocks and the impacts that happen not only from natural hazards but from many other external shocks, and to actually recover and take some positive benefit out of it. Because, as you know, many disasters really strengthen poverty trends. Many people do not, in middle-income, poor and rich countries, come out of disasters significantly poorer than they went in. And all these facts do exist, and I hope that you will find it useful to sort of think in the way you move forward in these three areas of analysis and outcomes. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share this observation.
Thank you very much indeed, Special Representative. Now the next question to be addressed to our speakers is to come from Nicaragua.
Buenas tardes, señor Cochera, y gracias por organizar este conversatorio. Y gracias a los invitados a este conversatorio. Lo que quiero hacer son unos comentarios. Considero importante... Ahora, sí, él decía que el señor Pan Giajuja, en una presentación que él enseñó en la pantalla, dicha presentación decía de que habían, voy a leer en inglés, legally agree upon goals, y tenía al mal llamado Acuerdo de Copenhagen comparado a la par del nuevo proceso que se llama la Plataforma de Durban. Nicaragua quisiera aclarar que el Acuerdo de Copenhague nunca fue aprobado ni mucho menos adoptado. Esto es ampliamente conocido, ¿verdad? Es más, está ampliamente también reconocido y se ha escrito mucho sobre ese periodo, ¿verdad? Muy triste, esa noche muy triste en el 2009, que fue un completo desastre, precisamente. Estas negociaciones en estos momentos dentro de la Convención Marco de Cambio Climático de Naciones Unidas se está trabajando arduamente para no repetir esa experiencia. Nadie quiere repetir la experiencia de Copenhague. No ayudó al proceso. Entonces, decir y comparar el Acuerdo de Copenhague a la par del proceso de la Plataforma de Durban no es conveniente y puede llevar a confusiones, porque contrario al Acuerdo de Copenhague, la Plataforma de Durban fue negociada y fue un proceso inclusivo, ¿verdad? Eso es una cosa. La otra cosa, estoy más de acuerdo con el señor Steer sobre el papel de nuestro grupo de trabajo en lo que se relaciona a cambio climático. Porque también es reconocido, ¿no?, que la Convención Marco de Cambio Climático es la responsable de este asunto. En particular, para los pueblos en desarrollo, esta es una cuestión de urgencia. Todo acuerdo, toda negociación se tiene que dar solamente dentro de la Convención Marco de Naciones Unidas sobre Cambio Climático. No puede haber ningún otro foro. O sea, no queremos repetir la experiencia de Copenhague. Esto es bien importante. ¿Por qué también esto es importante, verdad? Porque, ¿qué podemos hacer como grupo? Podemos tratar de ver cómo apoyamos los esfuerzos de negociación que se están haciendo en la conferencia. Eso sí lo podemos hacer. En particular, ¿verdad?, llamar a los países desarrollados a cumplir sus compromisos. Eso es muy necesario, particularmente todos los compromisos con lo referente a los medios de implementación. Creo que el señor Pan, cuando presentó, ¿verdad?, ese slide, tal vez se refería a que ciertos elementos que estaban en aquel acuerdo que no fue aprobado de Copenhague fueron después reflejados en las negociaciones. Pero ya eso es otro proceso, es un proceso de negociación, fueron negociados, no fueron impuestos como se pretendía imponer el acuerdo de Copenhague. Entre eso, ¿verdad?, están la necesidad de movilizar 100 mil millones de dólares que también fueron aprobados en Cancún y todavía los países en desarrollo estamos esperando ese cumplimiento. Y además, no es un compromiso, sino es movilización de recursos, porque todavía no se han podido identificar las fuentes de dónde saldrán esos recursos. Nicaragua lo planteó desde el primer momento en el 2009 y todavía seguimos esperando que nos digan cuáles van a ser las fuentes precisas de ese financiamiento. Tiene toda la razón, de verdad, el señor Steer cuando planteaba la urgente necesidad de los países en desarrollo sobre la adaptación. O sea, aquí solamente queremos hacer un comentario, ¿no?, que es reconocido, ustedes también, los dos panelistas lo dijeron, los países en desarrollo somos los que estamos sufriendo las mayores consecuencias de este desastre de cambio climático. A la misma vez, somos los que estamos haciendo mayores esfuerzos, tanto en la adaptación como en la mitigación. Por lo tanto, ¿verdad?, nuestro llamado es a que nuestro grupo apoye el proceso de negociación y haga un llamado a los países en desarrollo a cumplir sus compromisos en la Conferencia Marco de Cambio Climático. Muchas gracias.
Thank you much. Let me take three more very short questions and comments from the floor before coming back to our presenters. The first is to come from Iran.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and good afternoon to all. Let me also join the others in commending the presenters for their rich presentations. I have two points, if I may, and one is, in a sense, macro, and the other one, micro. In a macro sense, these kind of experience just recalls me the beginning of the working group when we were talking about having three dimensions at three different segments of goals or having them as theme-based and trying to bring targets under each theme. That's a kind of reminder for that process that we had at that time. But still, I'm curious about the proposals by the distinguished guests about the possible targets. Well, we have said there was a clear reference that we might not be able to have goals here, but we might have different targets under different themes. But what I'm asking is that beyond these kind of discussions that we are having, what might be the tangible proposals that the guests might propose? The other point that is rather micro, and it is somehow repetition of the what the others have been saying is that, as it has been raised by Mr. Steer, we have four different processes in terms of the issues related to climate. And while we are all familiar with the position here that the expert level is not here, the expert level is somewhere else, and they're deeply and in details are talking about the different aspects of the issue of the climate. With this in our mind, we might have three approaches in dealing with the targets or possible goal. And that would be, the first one would be that we take whatever they are doing over there and bring it here and just repeat it here. And that's one approach that even the Minister of France also said, that we are not going to repeat ourselves here. And also our distinguished colleague from Nicaragua. And the other one is that we just develop something here and give them guidance so that what way we have to go, and they take the guidance from here and develop it over there in terms of their expertise. I'm not sure how much would be this feasible, since the expertise is not here and the expertise is there. And for the first one, I'm not sure how much added value would that have if we repeat just what they have agreed over there. But there is also the third element, and that is whenever we are developing different targets under different themes, we just consider our mind the agreements we have in other processes. So without repeating those processes and the agreements over there, we just have the spirit of those agreements over our targets and goals, so that we can consider those targets and goals within the previous agreements. Which way might be more considerable for more feasible with the presenters, I would be glad to listen to their voices. Thank you very much.
Thank you much. And the next question, very short comment, may come from Japan. To these speakers.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair, and I thank the both presenters for the very excellent presentations. And however, my comment is rather very similar to the second part of my distinguished delegate from Iran. And yes, the co-chair's question is very pertinent and good. From my country's point of view, the climate change negotiation is a totally different process of this United Nations process. And secondly, there is a difference of the timings and timelines for the negotiation. As we all know, at the COP21, which will take place in December 2015, the parties of the UNFCCC have to have some kind of outcome for the legally binding agreement. And so I think that at the time of the September 2015, at the United Nations, we have to agree upon the post 2015 development agenda, it's a bit difficult for us to prejudge the outcome of the COP21. So I would think that I don't believe that even if we have some kind of the goals and targets on the climate change, they will not have a value added to the climate change process. So that is my point. And I do not believe, personally, I do not believe that we should not have a standalone goal for the climate change. Rather, I prefer the approach presented by Mr. Steer. So coming to the another comment, for instance, I have noticed one part of the Professor Pan's presentation, which is in his presentation, he picked up one indicator, which is the cumulative emissions per capita. I think that suggested indicator can be very, very politically debatable in the climate change negotiations. So that is why I'm saying that it's very risky to have a climate change goal in the SDGs. So there is one question for Professor Pan. If I remember correctly, when you explained the climate sustainability goal, you indicated several drivers, primary, secondary, and ultimate drivers. But I may have missed your explanation, but I do not perfectly understand the relationship between the drivers and the goal. So if you could elaborate a little bit more, I would be very appreciative. Thank you very much.
Thank you much indeed, Mr. Minami. And now let me offer the floor to Guatemala with a short comment or a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Ambassador, and thank you to the wonderful speakers. I'm not going to repeat many of the good points. I fully agree with what the questions that my colleague from Iran mentioned. I think we had a similar discussion when we were in the process of the Rio Plus 20 negotiations. Everyone here was saying, we can't bring climate change into the outcome. How are we going to do it? The negotiations are at a sticky point. And I think collectively, as a group, we understood that not having climate change in the Rio outcome would be senseless. We're speaking of the planetary challenge that has the potential of eradicating the humanity as we know it. So we have to somehow find a way of bringing the issue to the global goal framework without bringing the negotiations in. And I think that we managed to do it in the Rio Plus 20 outcome. We have climate change in that good outcome, and I think we can do it here as well. And we believe that the way to do it is very similar to what our speakers were proposing, and it's by connecting climate change to development, to poverty eradication. Without a perspective of climate change, all right to development would be very, very complicated. So if we manage to weave in climate change into our development space, into development gains, then I think we can really weave the issue without weaving the negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jimena. And I recognize Venezuela asking for the short question or comment, and then I have to close this part of the meeting and coming back to our presenters. Venezuela, the floor is yours.
Muchas gracias, señor copresidente. Muchísimas gracias a todos los que han intervenido, especialmente a los ponentes de hoy. Quiero hacer un breve comentario sobre este tema de la relación cambio climático y objetivos de desarrollo sostenible. Hay varias conexiones. Obviamente que lo que ha planteado Nicaragua es cierto. Son negociaciones diferentes y son espacios diferentes. Pero la interconexión y la interrelación es indudable. Por ejemplo, nosotros no podemos hoy hablar de pobreza y de erradicar la pobreza si no erradicamos lo que podríamos llamar la pobreza de la tierra. Porque en la medida que la tierra y la naturaleza se empobrecen, nos empobrecemos todos. Por otra parte, los temas de los objetivos de desarrollo están vinculados al financiamiento. Los temas vinculados a cambio climático están referidos también a financiamiento. Entonces, este tema del financiamiento es un tema transversal como otro. Entonces, no podemos dejar de mencionarlo. Y este tema del financiamiento tenemos que discutirlo. Por otra parte, el problema del financiamiento está vinculado a la crisis que vive el mundo y particularmente los países desarrollados. Las políticas en los países desarrollados de transferencia de fondos a los bancos, de rebaja de los impuestos a los que más tienen, están vinculadas a políticas recesivas y esas políticas recesivas están influyendo francamente en el financiamiento. O sea, los países en desarrollo no pueden pagar el costo de esas políticas recesivas que han sido propias de los países desarrollados. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you much indeed. Now the floor is back to our presenters. Maybe Professor Pan would like to start now.
Well, many thanks for the interventions. They seem highly relevant. And important, and many of the points are very valid, and some of the points may require a little bit of response and further interpretation. I think that for the Copenhagen Accord, it's not legally agreed. It is only taken note of. I think that our friend from Nicaraguan is definitely right. However, the key elements in the Copenhagen Accord is reflected in the following Cancun Agreement, and later in the Durban platform as well, like the 2-degree target. Of course, they are different, but some of the elements, I think that, you know, Copenhagen is a nightmare, but on the other hand, I think that, you know, some positive elements we have to acknowledge. And then our Iranian, you know, suggestion is definitely right. I think that this approach is, I think that to take and repeat is not a right approach, because there is no need to repeat. And even, you know, these two SDGs and climate agreement, they are different by nature in legal terms, because climate agreement 2015 is legally somewhat, you know, binding, is a legal document, and here SDGs, somewhat more a political sort of, you know, declaration or something. So they legally they are very much different. So that is why I think that, you know, they can make some, you know, linkages, and of course, you know, here, you know, what we can here we can have some impacts, but there is nothing that, you know, we can give them, because, you know, this is somewhat, you know, different as well. The thing is that, you know, some linkages are absolutely necessary. And for instance, because in we have poverty alleviation, we can see, you know, low carbon approach to poverty alleviation, and then we have infrastructure. We may see half the intensity of infrastructure construction and operation of carbon emissions. So this, I think that the linkages, you know, the integration is probably a possible approach. Our Japanese comment is right. I think that, you know, they are definitely issues, but of course, you know, we can simply make the linkage with regard to your question about the different levels of drivers. In the IPCC fifth assessment report of working group 3, we made such distinctions among these different levels of drivers. For instance, population is a driver, but that does not mean that you have more population and then you would have more emissions. This is very much dependent on, you know, the behavior. And if you have a somewhat, you know, wasteful and high carbon behavior, and then you would have, you know, more population, you would have more emission. But if you have a very energy saving and a low carbon approach of living, and then the more population does not necessarily mean higher emissions. So this is, you know, the secondary driver, like population, is not the ultimate one. Even behavior. Because behavior can be adjusted by information provision, by incentives and disincentives. So these drivers are at a different level. Report by the IPCC Working Group 3 is to be available very soon. I think that, you know, in that report, we would have more details. I think that, you know, the finance, of course, is a big issue. It's a part of, you know, the policy or the SDG framework. Without, you know, finance component, cooperation and the implementation would have no means. I do believe that this is a very important element. Then with regard to, you know, the standalone and sort of, you know, debate, I think that this is subject to a political decision. But no matter we include in SDGs the climate change target or not, the climate change negotiation would have a target anyway. But if we would have something here, in particular, if we have low carbon or climate change elements reflected in other SDG goals, I think that that would be relevant and would have a impact on climate change negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Pan. Dr. Steer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, this is an extremely rich discussion, I must say, and it's great to see these very difficult issues being struggled with. Look, there's some things we all agree on. I mean, this is not the forum for negotiating a climate change deal, and obviously our friends from Nicaragua and Japan, and really great questions from Iran. So that's clear. But what would be a massive mistake is, because of that, to say the processes should be, that this process should ignore climate change. So I hope nobody believes that this process of SDGs should ignore climate change. And I'll tell you why. I am not aware of how to achieve any SDGs worth having unless we deal with climate change. If you think we can make the progress on poverty we need to, make the progress on food security we need to, make the progress on health we need to, without dealing with climate change, it's fine to ignore it. But I don't think we can. And therefore, it's terribly important to say that. The world is looking at this group. I mean, I don't want to flatter you, but you're the best we've got. I mean, this is it. In the history of the world, we've never had, you know, this is as
Doctor,
seriously.
Was it the good news or bad news?
That's the good news. That's the good news. And so what you say, people will listen to. If you say without, and your job is not to meddle in the negotiations, but it is your job to say we're going to set some SDGs, and actually they can't be done unless we address climate change. That's totally legitimate. You should say it. It's not messing in anyone else's territory. So I think that's point number one. And to some extent, that's why the sort of the preamble, or what you call the chapeau, is actually terribly important. The second point is, you know, as our friend from Iran says, those guys at UNFCCC, they're the ones that are expert on climate change. Yes. But how do you actually address climate change? How do you actually do resilience and adaptation? It's development experts. It actually is development, as we said from Bangladesh, the example we gave. How do you do resilient agriculture? That's a development issue. So in some ways, what you can offer through the goals, through the targets, and through the indicators is to some extent a sort of a means of implementation of things that we absolutely must do. So on the resilient side, I mean, whether it's resilient cities or resilient agriculture, on the mitigation side, you know, issues of resource efficiency, they are core to development. And so I see a wonderful role here. And so, I mean, it was a very nice interchange that we had earlier on, where I said, look, the job of this group is not to mess with the negotiations. And Dr. Pan said, well, actually, we should try and influence them. And it sounds like we were disagreeing. No, we're not. We absolutely shouldn't be messing and cutting across what's the legitimate way of reaching a climate deal. But we do have to say, look, this is an important issue. It's like finance. You can't achieve the SDGs without finance. You can't achieve the SDGs without addressing climate change.
Dr. Steer, Professor Pan, on behalf of the Open Working Group, I would like to thank you very much for your valuable contribution. And I think all of you may agree with me that they deserve a very good round of applause. Now the Open Working Group is invited to have the general interactive exchange of views on the topic of climate change and disaster risk reduction. I'd like to kindly remind all speakers to limit their statements to no longer than 5 minutes. First, I would like to offer the floor to the distinguished permanent representative of Bolivia, speaking on behalf of G77 in China, and on this occasion to welcome him in the first time in his new capacity.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have the honor, as the new chair of the group of 77 in China, to deliver this statement on behalf of the group. I would like to take this opportunity to wish everyone a fruitful 2014. The group acknowledged the issue brief prepared by the technical support team and thank Mr. Andrew Steer, President and CEO of the World Resource Institute for his keynote address on climate change and disaster risk reduction, and also the one made by Professor Jiahua Pan. Co-chair, climate change and disaster risks are serious threats to poverty eradication and sustainable development. Developing countries are facing significant risks from the adverse impacts of climate change and are already experiencing increased impacts, including persistent droughts and extreme weather events, massive flooding, sea level rise, coastal erosion, glacial retreat, land and forest degradation, loss of biodiversity, desertification, and ocean acidification. For many developing countries, climate change and disaster risk represent one of the biggest threats to food security in the 21st century. Their impacts are already causing disruption in the livelihoods in many parts of the world, particularly for those that are dependent on predictable weather and arable land. For small island developing states, for instance, climate change and sea level rise represents the gravest of threats to their survival and viability, including for some the loss of territory. We are deeply concerned that more than 226 million people globally are affected on average by disaster associated with natural hazards every year. While hazards are natural, disasters are preventable. We have been informed by the scientific community that the current drivers of risks are linked to poor policies and practices in land use, planning, governance, urbanization, natural resource management, ecosystem management, as well as increasing poverty levels. We recognize, therefore, that the current model of development needs to be realigned to the changing world in order to address climate change and disaster risk reduction. It must be a model that is inclusive, equitable, risk-sensitive, adaptive, and disaster-resilient. Co-chair, with regard to climate change, the group reiterates its view that the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change is a primary international intergovernmental forum for negotiating the global response to climate change. We stress that the international community, particularly the developed countries, given their historical responsibility, need to take the lead in addressing the climate change challenge within the UNFCCC and its principles and provisions, particularly the principles of equity and common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities, and provide financial and technology support for developing countries. To mitigate damage from climate change and to reduce disaster risk, we call for the fulfillment of climate-related and environmental commitments by developed countries, in particular those under the UNFCCC, the Kyoto Protocol, as well as all commitments made under the various sustainable development frameworks applicable to developing countries, including the MDGs. Moreover, we urge our development partners to honor their commitments made through the Cancun Agreement at the 16th Conference of the Parties of the UNFCCC. This includes a work program on loss and damage, a technology mechanism, and the establishment of the Green Climate Fund, which developed countries have expressed broad agreement to mobilize $100 billion per year, both for adaptation and mitigation by 2020. It is important that we proceed with a sense of urgency in the climate change negotiations in accordance with the principles and provisions of the Climate Change Convention. It is important to ensure coherence between climate negotiations and other intergovernmental agreements, such as a successor for the Hyogo Framework for Action. In the context of the SDGs, we should give due consideration for a global goal and target to address disaster risk and resilience in the context of sustainable development. Co-chairs, the group underscores the importance of global efforts to strengthen action on climate change and disaster risk reduction as part of the international sustainable development agenda. The climate change challenges are multidimensional, while disaster risk reduction is cross-cutting, both of which are intricately linked to different elements of the three dimensions of sustainable development. To address climate change and build resilience to disaster and climate impacts, the international community should embrace a multi-stakeholder, multi-sector approach within the global development agenda. This requires coordinated policies and actions across all sectors and at all levels of decision-making with all aspects of sustainable development. Lastly, the group recognizes the interrelationship between climate change, loss of biodiversity, and desertification, and the need to intensify efforts to combat desertification and to promote sustainable land management, and stress the need for enhanced cooperation and coordination among the secretariats of the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, UNFCCC, and the Convention on Biological Diversity, while respecting their individual mandates. We reiterate our call on all parties to fully support the implementation of these conventions in all their aspects, including the promotion, the exchange of knowledge on best practices and lessons learned from global and regional cooperation. I thank you.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Bolivia for his statement. And now I invite the distinguished representative of the European Union to make his statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I speak on behalf of the EU and its member states, and our full statement will be made available on the website. The EU and its member states are fully committed to eradicating poverty and ensuring a sustainable future for all. And our global challenge is to put our economies on the path to low-emission climate and disaster-resilient development. And indeed, we believe that a transformational shift to a low-emission and climate-resilient growth path globally is a precondition for eradicating poverty and ensuring a sustainable future. And we also believe that this presents many economic opportunities, as low-carbon measures and disaster-resilient measures more than pay for themselves in broad economic terms. In relation to climate change, under the UN Framework Convention, we've agreed to adopt a new global climate agreement at COP21 in Paris in late 2015. And the post-development framework should therefore be consistent with and supportive of international commitments, goals, and targets on climate change. Indeed, we think efforts to address climate change should be embedded in this post-2015 framework. And relevant areas for this embedding, in our view, includes sustainable consumption and production, sustainable energy, transport, education, health, urbanization, disaster risk reduction, food security, and also water, biodiversity, as well as security. Furthermore, the EU welcomes the fact that the future climate agreement will ensure the participation of all parties under the convention and recognizes the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities. However, the EU also stresses that responsibilities and capabilities are differentiated but also evolve over time, and that the agreement should reflect those evolving realities by including a spectrum of commitments in a dynamic way. Turning to disaster resilience, the EU, as one of the world's largest providers of assistance to people affected by disasters, which have increased at an alarming rate in recent years, is strongly committed to risk management and vulnerability reduction as critical components of poverty reduction and sustainable development. And at the global level, the HOGO Framework for Action has been instrumental in supporting global, regional, and national efforts for disaster risk reduction. And we look forward to an ambitious post-2015 revised HOGO Framework, placing disaster risk reduction as a key element of sustainable development. And on this basis, we'd like to emphasize three key messages. Firstly, the poorest and marginalized are the most exposed to disaster risks, and we need to tackle all determinants of vulnerability, including conflict, insecurity, weak democratic governance, poor public health, and the impact of climate change. Secondly, we need to promote technological and ecosystem-based solutions and focus on reducing the underlying risk drivers, in particular in ecosystem management. In this context, all major infrastructure projects should be both climate and disaster resilient, and disaster risk reduction measures should be systematically incorporated into public development strategies as well as business management strategies. Our third message is that we need to engage all sectors and build up governance structures for disaster management and strengthen stakeholders' capacities at all levels. And indeed, strong local structures are essential to mitigate risks and to help to address the root causes of disasters. For these reasons, disaster risk reduction needs to be integrated and mainstreamed into the range of priorities of the post-2015 development agenda. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the various global processes culminating in 2015 provide a unique opportunity for the issue of sustainable development, poverty reduction, climate change, and disaster risk reduction to be addressed in a coherent and mutually informative, supportive way. And therefore, addressing climate change and disaster risk reduction in the discussions on sustainable development goals will help ensure that these goals are truly sustainable in the long term. Thank you very much.
I thank the distinguished representative of the European Union for his statement. And now I invite the distinguished permanent representative of Benin to make a statement on behalf of the LDCs.
Monsieur le co-président, je voudrais tout d'abord vous féliciter pour la manière dont vous dirigez nos discussions. Mr. Co-Chair, I have the honor to deliver this statement on behalf of LDCs. Climate change poses exorbitant challenges to the survival of our societies, countries, and people. The IPCC's fifth assessment report paints a grim picture of increased climate impact for LDCs in the coming years, including increasingly severe tropical storms, drought, and floods. LDCs are disproportionately exposed to the effects of environment degradation, natural hazards, and climate change, to which they contributed very little, with a constant CO2 emission per capita of at 0.2%. Because of the limited adaptation and mitigation capacities, their agriculture, ecosystem, health, and physical infrastructure are likely to be seriously affected. The LDCs that are low-lying and small island are the most exposed to these shocks. It aggravates the development challenges that the LDCs have been facing due to their serious structural handicaps. Gruesome effects of climate change are not new to LDCs. 51% of the deaths caused by climate-related disaster in the 33 years between 1980 and 2013 occurred in the LDCs. Nearly
5 times the global average. During the last 3 years, this figure rose to 67%. Sea level rise will increasingly affect small island and low-lying coastal countries by exacerbating erosion and leading to loss of land and coastal industries. Equally worrisome is the fact that the group of LDCs is not only the most exposed to disasters, but the least equipped to deal with them. Natural hazards destroy lives and livelihood and have long-term consequences for human and economic development. All 6 countries with the highest ranking in the International Strategy for Disaster Risk Reduction Index for 2010-2011 were least developed countries. The interconnectedness of risks posed by climate change and disaster justify the need for a comprehensive approach in building a climate and disaster resilient development. Thus, both disasters and climate change need to be integrated into the development program. Without appropriate resilience, LDCs will not be able to make sustained progress in meeting the internationally agreed development goals and targets. The Istanbul Program of Action, therefore, set 2 important goals for LDCs for the current decade. Those are strengthening least developed countries' ability to withstand and overcome the adverse effects of climate change, enhance sustainable growth and protect biodiversity, and second, building the resilience of LDCs to withstand natural hazards in order to reduce the risk of disasters. Despite many constraints and unprecedented challenges, LDC have undertaken significant measures to combat climate change and disaster risk reduction. 48 LDCs have submitted NAPAs. Some of us have also started formulating our medium and long-term adaptation plans. Likewise, these LDCs have voluntarily submitted NAMAs, going above and beyond their responsibilities and capacities. Our countries have also started ratifying the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. 9 LDCs have started formulating low carbon development strategies. Finance is a key to unlocking many of these actions necessary to address climate change and disaster risk reduction in LDCs. However, climate finance remains a promise that is ominously under-delivered. Out of the assessed $5 billion needed to implement the project identified by the LDCs under their National Adaptation Program of Action, developed countries have committed only $775 million US dollars. The World Bank estimated that $30 to $100 billion will be needed to finance climate adaptation annually by 2030, and $140 to $170 billion will be required to reduce greenhouse gas emission called mitigation. The total requirements are significantly larger than the pledged $100 billion. In 2009, developed countries committed to a goal of mobilizing $100 billion a year by 2020 to address the needs of developing countries. However, they will achieve this goal. How they will achieve these goals remain unclear. The small amount of disaster risk funding is also not equitably shared. There is a high concentration of funding in a relatively small number of middle-income countries. The top 10 recipients received nearly $8 billion, while the remaining 140, just $5.6 billion combined. Many high-risk countries have received negligible amounts of resources. Addressing the gap in climate financing and creating plans of action are key LDC expectations in the area of climate change and disaster reduction. Climate vulnerable least developed countries need increased finances to adapt to the impact of climate change. It is also important to map out a concrete plan to negotiate a new protocol on climate change applicable to all parties with clear timelines, milestones, and deliverables to complete the work by 2015 and ensure that the protocol is implemented from 2020. The current model of development needs to be realigned with a changing world in order to address climate change and disaster risk. The Rio Plus 20 outcome called for better coordinated strategies that integrate disaster risk reduction and climate change considerations into public and private investment, decisions making, and planning of humanitarian, post-recovery, and development actions. Therefore, both climate change actions and disaster risk reduction need to be incorporated into the development strategies in an integrated manner. These are important for a transformative shift toward more resilient development. With a low carbon profile, rich natural assets, and early stage of structural transformation, LDCs, with appropriate support from their development partners, are well positioned to catalyze a transition toward a green growth and sustainable development in their countries. I thank you very much.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Benin for his statement. And now I invite the distinguished permanent representative of Palau speaking on behalf of Pacific Small Island Development States. Could you please give the mic to Palau, please?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have the honor to speak on behalf of the Pacific Troika in the Open Working Group on the SDGs, namely Nauru, Papua New Guinea, and my own country, Palau. This intervention is also made on behalf of the 9 other Pacific Small Island Developing States, the PSIDS, represented at the UN, namely the Federated States of Micronesia, Fiji, Kiribati, Republic of Marshall Islands, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, Tuvalu, and Vanuatu. We associate ourselves with the statement on this segment's cluster of issues on the climate change and disaster risk reduction to be made by our Pacific colleagues of Nauru as AOC's chair. Except for our PSITS members who are not members of G77, others in our group also align themselves with the statement made by the newly inaugurated distinguished chair of G77 in China, Bolivia. We thank the technical support team for the informative background notes for this session. And likewise, our gratitude and commendation also goes to the keynote speakers and panelists for this insightful and thought-provoking presentations on these highly important thematic issues now under consideration. Co-chair, climate change is the gravest threat to the sustainable livelihoods, well-being, viability, security, and sovereignty of our respective countries. And we agree with the TSD report and others speakers today that climate change and disaster risks are fundamental concerns of mutual interest to the whole international community in the context of sustainable development. So while we respect the mandates of other bodies like the UNFCCC to tackle climate change and disaster risk reduction, we believe that these are among the most salient issues and that they must also be addressed in the post 2015 development agenda, and the SDGs in particular. A global development agenda that ignores climate change would be unacceptable. overwhelming scientific consensus, such as that highlighted by the IPCC's fifth assessment report, speaks about slow-onset events impacting on sustainable development for the international community. Escalating greenhouse gas emissions over the past century have resulted in degraded land fertility, lowered agricultural production, and reduced biodiversity. The alarming acidification of our oceans and seas is impacting the health of the marine ecosystem and continues to threaten our food security and economic viability. The rapid loss of polar sea ice and sea level rise challenge our sovereignty as nations. The striking and increasing incidence of more frequent and extreme weather events are damaging our limited infrastructure and posing health hazards for our people, as well as taxing the resilience of our human spirit. Combined, the effects of climate change caused by greenhouse gas emissions are seriously threatening the sustainability of our development now and into the future. These are the harsh realities that we as small islands developing states continue to face in seeking to sustainably develop. And that is why the PCITs at the national, regional, and at our recent inter-regional meeting last August in Barbados and in July in Nandi, Fiji, respectively, have decided to recommit to address our serious sustainable development concerns under the ambit of internationally agreed development goals, including the MDGs, the Rio Plus 20 outcome, and particularly through the Barbados Plan of Action and the Mauritius Strategy of Implementation, leading up to and beyond the Third International Conference on SIDS in Samoa in September 2014. We all recognize that the SIDS contribute the least to climate change and yet continue to bear the brunt of its impact. We alone cannot overcome these existential threats. We therefore welcome and urge the international community to unite with us and assist us to mitigate and adapt to the challenges posed by climate change and disasters for our sustainable future. It is in this spirit, co-chair, that we therefore call on the intergovernmental process to recognize that climate change and disaster risk reduction are cross-cutting issues. They could be addressed as targets and indicators under certain overarching sustainable development agenda, as highlighted in the TSD report. For instance, under an extreme poverty eradication goal, a climate change target could be for all countries to attain a globally agreed standard minimum low carbon economy status. The target should also account for the different states of respect countries' development. Indicators for such a target could include national land policies and legislation to promote best practices in sustainable agriculture, eradicate corruption related to land issues, transfer of environmentally friendly technology for agriculture and economic development, and build national capacity and capabilities through technical assistance, training, and institutional strengthening. Similarly, under a possible sustainable or renewable energy goal, the climate change targets could include countries to be carbon neutral by a globally agreed timeline. Indicators for this target could comprise phasing out fossil fuel under national legislation and policies, transfer of appropriate technology that is eco-friendly and streamline, simplify and harmonize processes to access international finance for energy neutral development that facilitate adaptation, mitigation, and risk reduction. Mr. Co-Chair, in the context of the Pacific SIDS, our own proposal for a dedicated goal on oceans and seas, we envisage that climate change and disaster risk reduction can be incorporated under the target of achieving a healthy marine environment. This would encompass conservation of a proportion of coastal and marine protected areas of particular importance to biodiversity and ecosystem service. It would also address the impact of ocean acidification on marine and coastal ecosystems and resources, in particular coral reefs and mangroves, by enhancing their resilience. In conclusion, Mr. Co-Chair, we again applaud the commendable progress made so far in the Open Working Group on SDGs, as well as for the inclusive, balanced, fair, and transparent manner in which the intergovernmental process is managed under the leadership of the co-chairs, and recommit ourselves to work with both co-chairs and other stakeholders. I thank you.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Palau for his statement, and on behalf of my co-chair as well, particular thanks for his support. Let me now invite the distinguished chargé d'affaires of Nauru to speak on behalf of the Alliance of Small Island States.
Thank you. Co-chairs, Nauru has the honor to speak on behalf of the Alliance of Small Island States, AOSIS, a group of 44 countries extremely vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change. Climate change is an urgent threat to humanity. While small island developing states, SIDS, are among those that contribute least to global climate change, we are among those that suffer the most. SIDS continue to express alarm and grave concerns about climate change as it poses the most serious threat to our territorial integrity, viability, and survival, and it undermines our efforts to achieve sustainable development. The IPCC's Working Group 1 summary for policymakers indicates that climate change impacts are accelerating, and most aspects of climate change will persist for many centuries, even if emissions of CO2 are stopped. From the findings of the IPCC special reports on extreme events, it becomes evident that managing the risks associated with climate change-related impacts and loss and damage is crucial because of the irreversible threats these impacts and losses pose to sustainable development. Co-chairs, for SIDS, the adverse impacts of climate change compound existing critical economic, environmental, social, and security-related issues and place additional burdens on national responses and development systems. SIDS are already experiencing the impacts of climate change, including losses and damages from climate change impacts that can no longer be prevented through mitigation nor adaptation. The immediate losses that are now being experienced are challenging our limited capacity to respond. Co-chairs, while we firmly maintain that the UNFCCC is the primary international intergovernmental forum for negotiating the global responses to climate change remains an existential threat affecting everyone and everything. Climate change must therefore be treated in the SDGs and in the post-2015 development agenda as a cross-cutting issue. Without addressing climate change comprehensively in the SDGs and post-2015 development agenda, the goals on eradicating poverty and achieving sustainable development will be ineffective. Co-chairs, we remain concerned that while climate change has been recognized as a serious threat to sustainable development, concrete and convincing suggestions on how to address it effectively and across the framework has not been forthcoming. Many goal areas and targets that have been suggested do not address climate change at all. This could jeopardize current and future action to eradicate poverty and sustainable development. SIDS urge that concerted effort and time be invested into discussing how climate change could be treated as a cross-cutting issue in the suggested goals. We have heard some suggestions on integration and mainstreaming, but we still do not know what we need to further define and elaborate these issues. We look forward to continue working closely and constructively with you both and all of our partners on the SDG process. I thank you.
I thank the distinguished chargé d'affaires of Nauru for her statement. And now I would like to invite the distinguished permanent representative of Poland to make a statement on behalf of his country and Romania. Could you please provide the mic to the ambassador of Poland? Maybe you should raise your hand for the technicians to see. It should come. Raise your hand. Dear colleagues, could you please assist us with the mic to be provided for the ambassador of Poland? If that would not be possible, then to the place of Romania. Just push it once again.
Oh, okay, it's working.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me say that Romania and Poland aligned ourselves. Works. with the statement delivered by the European Union.
Ambassador, don't push it. Now push. Okay, and leave it like that. It will come back.
Yes.
Here you are.
Let me start with the beginning. First of all, let me say that Romania and Poland align ourselves with the statement delivered by the European Union. Now I would like to present some comments for today's debate on the climate change and disaster risk reduction. First, let me make some remarks on climate change. The problem of climate change and its numerous interlinkages, inter alia, with the eradication of poverty, food production, energy, agriculture, land degradation, health, education, and security lays in the heart of the sustainable development agenda. The IPCC, in its recently released fifth assessment report, noted that warming of the climate and the observed weather changes are unprecedented. The atmosphere and ocean have warmed, the amounts of snow and ice have diminished, sea level has risen, and concentration of greenhouse gases have increased. The international community cooperates together to develop three important climate-related frameworks that will be elements of the post 2015 order: New Development Agenda, the Global Legally Binding Agreement on Climate Change, and the Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction. These frameworks need to be coherent and complementary, need to be built on each other and make use of the existing experiences. The goals and the targets for climate change should all be also coherent with the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. In a world that is constantly changing, we need to act together. There is no time to lose. Common efforts of all countries are needed to stabilize the temperature rise at the level 2 Celsius degrees. The transformation towards low carbon, resilient and sustainable development is crucial and can only be achieved through the collective efforts and enhanced and innovative actions. For instance, increasing energy efficiency, promotion of sustainable land use management, and reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. The SDGs process should build on the upcoming World Leaders Climate Summit that will be held in September 2014 in New York, and will be crucial to provide the impetus towards the 2015 Global Agreement and post-2015 Development Agenda. All leaders, from the governments and also from businesses and finance community, cities, local governments, and civil society, should engage in the summit and declare their contribution to the sustainable and climate resilient post-2015 future. Mr. Co-Chair, now let me say a few remarks on the disaster risk reduction. In the past few years, natural disasters have struck with a significant impact in all parts of the world, from the Indian Ocean tsunami to earthquakes in Iran and South Asia, from cyclones in Philippines, Burma, and Caribbean, and to the Pacific, to heavy flooding, mudflows, and landslides in several parts of Asia and Latin America. Hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives, and millions their livelihoods. In this regard, the achievement of Hyogo Framework for Action should be recognized, and the future's SDGs should be coherent with the new global framework on disaster risk reduction that will be adopted in March 2015 in Japan. During the COP19, the Warsaw International Mechanism on Loss and Damage was established to address loss and damages caused by the adverse impacts on climate change, including the extreme weather events, especially in the developing countries, that they are particularly vulnerable. One of the aims of the Warsaw International Mechanism is to enhance knowledge and understanding of comprehensive risk management approaches to address loss and damages. The future SDGs should be coherent and complementary to the above-mentioned initiatives. Disaster risk reduction should be a priority for national and local authorities and communities, which should be prepared and equipped for the effective disaster management. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Poland for his statement and my profound apologies for the technical mishap at the beginning of your speech. Now, I invite the distinguished representative of Norway to deliver a statement on behalf of her country, Denmark and Ireland.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Current and coming climate challenges are altering the conditions under which we develop and will have to be met by transformational changes across sectors and levels. We need to cut global emissions of greenhouse gases. The world community has agreed that we must limit global warming to below 2 degrees since pre-industrial level. A new agreement under the UNFCCC must put us on the path towards this goal. Those hardest hit by the adverse impacts of climate change are the poorest, who have contributed the least to the problem, as well as women and indigenous peoples. Efforts to make people, communities, and countries resilient must be stepped up through deliberate adaptation and risk reduction efforts. Building resilience is both a humanitarian issue and a development challenge, as disasters and climate change threaten development. We need to prioritize sustainable development before and during disasters and in the post-disaster phase. Similarly, in development planning, we need to prepare for disasters. Local people and responsive local governments are essential for effective disaster management. Preservation and rehabilitation of ecosystems is vitally important. Ecosystems are our first line of defense against extreme events and slow-onset climatic events. Rising sea levels pose a future challenge, in particular for small island states and low-lying coastal zones, but also for many of the world's megacities. People living in poverty are often the most exposed in disaster-prone areas. Reducing poverty will make people less exposed to disasters, and not addressing climate change will lead to increased poverty. Forests are important for climate change mitigation and adaptation, as well as for disaster risk reduction. Forests provide food, products, and ecosystem services. They maintain local freshwater production and help prevent floods, droughts, erosion, and avalanches. Sustainable forest management is therefore crucial. We must reduce deforestation and forest degradation, preserve biodiversity, and enhance sustainable livelihoods. Climate services are important tools for adaptation and disaster management, and must reach out to all affected groups and vulnerable people. Climate services, like seasonal weather forecasts and early warning systems, make climate-robust planning possible, such as what and when to plant. So how can we address these concerns within the SDG framework? Climate change and disaster risk are multidimensional challenges and difficult to capture in any one sustainable development goal. We need a multi-sector approach, and we need multi-stakeholder action. The private sector has a key role. We need win-win solutions that address the challenges related to climate change and disasters in a way that also address key development priorities like access to energy, food and nutrition security, water, health and education. Let me illustrate through a few examples. First, energy accounts for about 60% of global emissions of greenhouse gases. Increased production and use of renewable energy is at the heart of solutions to climate change, but may also contribute to poverty reduction, improved health, and women's empowerment. Indoor air pollution from traditional cookstoves is a major cause of lung disease, causing over 3 million deaths every year, in particular women and children. The use of clean cookstoves will both save lives and reduce the climate impact. Access to sustainable energy will reduce the need for firewood collection and may open new opportunities for women. Second, climate smart agriculture contributes to climate change mitigation, adaptation, and increased resilience while improving food and nutrition security. Sustainable agriculture techniques, such as watershed management, terracing, and no-till agriculture, can contribute to land restoration. Third, disasters may destroy schools and disrupt education. We can build resilience by building safer schools, establishing early warning systems in schools, teaching children about climate change and disaster management, and maintaining education during crisis. In conclusion, Mr. Co-Chair, we need to develop climate smart goals. We need goals that aim at building resilience, and we need targets that inspire action across all relevant policies and sectors, and at all levels of decision making. Actions that promote sustainable development and enable us to cope with the threats caused by climate change and natural hazards. I thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
I thank the distinguished representative of Norway for her statement. And now I invite the distinguished DPR of Slovenia to deliver a statement on behalf of his country and Montenegro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you have rightly mentioned, I'm speaking on behalf of Montenegro and Slovenia. We align ourselves with the statement delivered by the delegation of the European Union. Climate change is without a doubt one of the greatest challenges to sustainable development. It cannot be perceived as only an environmental issue, as it affects our societies and economies in various ways. As such, climate change should be one of the underlying themes in the future SDGs. With current level of ambition on reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, we won't be able to achieve the agreed global goal to hold the increase in global average temperature below 2 degrees Celsius, above pre-industrial levels. Climate change mitigation must thus remain a priority for the global community. On the other hand, future Further efforts on adaptation to climate change are equally important as it contributes to building more climate-resilient societies. This means enhancing the preparedness and capacity to respond to the impacts of climate change at local, national, regional, and international levels, developing a coherent approach and improving coordination. With expectedly higher impacts of climate change in the coming decades due to the delayed impacts of the past and current greenhouse gas emissions in our countries, we believe that in order to be able to deal with the foreseen climate impacts and their economic, environmental, and social costs, appropriate adaptation measures need to be taken up with the utmost seriousness and determination by all stakeholders at all levels. In this regard, synergies of various policies should be fully exploited. It also needs to be emphasized that adaptation action can provide new market opportunities and jobs in sectors such as agricultural technologies, ecosystem management, construction, water management, and insurance. As such, it can promote sustainable economy, stimulate climate-resilient investment, and create new jobs. We also see added value in exchange of good practices among states, regions, cities, and other stakeholders. The introduction and promotion of examples of successful climate change adaptation can contribute to further action for greater resilience. We also welcome existing examples and practices of applying ecosystem-based approaches in sustainable water management and early warning systems. In our opinion, such approaches are usually cost-effective under various scenarios, especially in cases that aim for reduced flood risk, reduction of soil erosion, improved water and air quality, and reduced heat island. For as high a number of countries possible to be able to adopt comprehensive adaptation strategies, various forms of funding, including private sector, should be provided to support capacity building and stepping up with adaptation action where necessary. Mr. Chairman, we would like to point out that disaster risk is not only linked with the climate change, but with other factors as well, as development is not impeded only by climate and weather-induced disasters. Hence, it is important to invest in the design and implementation of the strategies and programs that are so intersectoral in approach and that address underlying risk factors as well as strengthen capacity of communities to identify, prevent, mitigate, and prepare for disasters. Resilience is also strongly connected with disaster risk reduction. Efforts in this field can also contribute to sustainable economic and social development, including poverty reduction. In recent years, progress has been made in reduction of risk and strengthened resilience. In our belief, progress towards more resilient societies and environment can be made through action of all relevant stakeholders at all levels, from local to international. As the UN Special Representative of the Secretary General for Disaster Risk Reduction pointed out in her proposed elements for consideration in the development of the post-2015 framework for disaster risk reduction, risk management should be a part of sustainable development policies and practices in order to tackle existing challenges and seize potential opportunities and strengthen resilience. In conclusion, we must continue to bear in mind the fact that our deliberations on SDGs and broader post-2015 agenda run in parallel with the work of the new Global Climate Agreement under the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change and on post-2015 Hyogo Framework of Action Process for Disaster Risk Reduction. We believe that the work and outcomes of the Open Working Group under the UN Framework Convention of Climate Change and on post-Hyogo Framework should be mutually supportive and contribute in a coordinated manner to achieving sustainable development. I thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thank the distinguished Deputy Permanent Representative of Slovenia for his statement. And now I invite the distinguished representative of Croatia to deliver her statement on behalf of her country and Bulgaria.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to speak on behalf of Bulgaria and Croatia, and we align our countries with the statement of the EU and its member states. Mr. Co-Chair, the Brundtland Report defines sustainable development in 1987 as development which meets the needs of the current generations without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. However, they seem to be already compromised. The world has undergone many changes and is faced with continuous environmental degradation, increased consumption, depletion of natural resources, rising greenhouse gas emissions, and climate change. We have been witnessing more frequent extreme weather conditions, which are directly related to climate change. All this has an impact on livelihoods, and in particular on poorer countries that are vulnerable to degradation and depletion of natural resources and particularly dependent on them. The forthcoming decades will continue to prove the unavoidability of climate change impact reflected in frequency and severity of extreme weather events, which will add to existing pressures on agriculture, water supplies, infrastructure, and coastal areas. Therefore, we need to address climate change, comprehensive risk reduction, and resilience, mitigation, and adaptation in the context of development. In that sense, reaching the new comprehensive climate agreement with legally binding commitment for all by 2015 at the latest is one of the important steps toward poverty eradication and sustainable development. Similarly, it is important to pursue the implementation of the current Hyogo Framework of Action, as well as consultations on a post-2015 framework for disaster risk reduction. The goals related to climate change and disaster risk reduction should be in line with the existing international agreements, their goals and targets in the field of climate change, biodiversity, disaster risk reduction, and other related fields. Mr. Chair, Bulgaria and Croatia share the opinion that climate change is an essential threat to humanity and a multiplicator of threats which has to be tackled because of its impacts on environment, economy, and society, and eventually on peace and security. On the other hand, climate change may be the unique opportunity for humankind to make the shift towards green growth and low-carbon economies. Therefore, addressing climate change and disaster risk reduction among the priorities of the post-2015 framework, together with coinciding goals and targets of legal instruments for climate change and disaster risk reduction, is an opportunity for us to ensure the future we all want for this planet and for the future generations. Thank you.
I thank the distinguished representative of Croatia for her statement. Now I invite the distinguished permanent representative of Peru to make his statement on behalf of his country and Mexico.
Gracias, señor presidente. El Perú y México agradecen al Grupo Técnico de Apoyo por la Nota de Cambio Climático y Desastres, así como las presentaciones de esta tarde y la mañana. El documento ilustra claramente la complejidad de estos problemas por su naturaleza transversal, además por las múltiples interacciones con diversos ámbitos de la agenda internacional. El desafío que representa el cambio climático y la ocurrencia de desastres no se limita exclusivamente a lo ambiental, ya que existe plena evidencia de que sus impactos en las áreas social y económica. Por lo tanto, concordamos con la noción de que se trata de un asunto que concierne al desarrollo sostenible y, en consecuencia, debe ser considerado como parte de los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible. La coincidencia en el tiempo de tres procesos fundamentales para acometer el cambio climático y la reducción del riesgo de desastres este año y el próximo ofrece a la comunidad internacional una oportunidad única de presentar un marco integrado, coherente, verificable e de implementación de principios, objetivos y metas que consideren ambas áreas. Nos estamos refiriendo al presente proceso de definición de Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible, a la próxima Conferencia de Partes del Cambio Climático, COP, en Lima, y a la tercera Conferencia Mundial sobre Desastres a realizarse en Sendai, Japón, en 2015. Consideramos que se debe garantizar una aproximación coherente y sincronizada entre dichos procesos, pues es imposible hablar de desarrollo sin hacer referencia a los efectos negativos del cambio climático y a la vulnerabilidad de nuestras sociedades ante la ocurrencia de desastres. Al igual que otros temas que hemos abordado en reuniones precedentes de este grupo, el cambio climático mantiene relación con otros campos y disciplinas como la forestal, eficiencia energética, energías renovables, agua e inversión, para fomentar las conductas deseadas, y debe atenderse a través de metas que sean aplicables a todos, tanto a países desarrollados como a países en vía de desarrollo. Los objetivos y metas en materia de cambio climático deben integrarse de tal manera que contribuyan a impulsar un modelo de desarrollo global sustentable, resiliente y bajo de carbono. Tales propuestas deben impulsar también el crecimiento sostenible que, a través del equilibrio entre aspectos económicos, ambientales y sociales, contribuya a transitar hacia un nuevo paradigma de desarrollo. A la luz de estas consideraciones, proponemos desagregar el tema del cambio climático, identificando su naturaleza transversal con indicadores que ilustren niveles de deforestación, de acceso a fuentes de energía renovables, el involucramiento de actores no gubernamentales, así como metas de mitigación de efectos de gases invernadero. De igual manera, es importante que en la definición de un nuevo set de objetivos y metas se considere la adaptación al cambio climático y la gestión del riesgo de desastres como aspectos convergentes y sinérgicos para lograr un desarrollo sostenible. Reafirmamos que nuestra tarea en este grupo de trabajo debe estar guiada por los objetivos de la Conferencia de Partes de Cambio Climático, sin que ello signifique una interferencia con el proceso de las COP, buscando más bien que los elementos anteriormente citados nutran también nuestra reflexión en torno a la definición de un nuevo set de objetivos y metas de desarrollo. Gradualmente se ha reconocido que los desastres son el resultado de la combinación de la actividad humana y no así un producto exclusivo de la naturaleza. El riesgo de que ocurran y la vulnerabilidad a la que se expone una comunidad o infraestructura específica determina su impacto. La no superación de la pobreza exacerba las condiciones de vulnerabilidad y ha hecho menos resiliente a las comunidades frente a eventos de origen natural o inducidos por la acción humana, lo que retroalimenta la situación de fragilidad y pobreza de las poblaciones afectadas. Las comunidades se hacen más vulnerables cuando la gestión del riesgo de desastres no forma parte de los planes y estrategias de desarrollo nacionales, lo que se evidencia las crecientes magnitudes que alcanzan los desastres en el mundo. Para México y Perú, la gestión del riesgo de desastres es un proceso integral y de alto impacto social, que debe ser parte intrínseca de los procesos de planeamiento en todas las entidades públicas a nivel de gobierno. En ese sentido, reiteramos, existe un vínculo claro entre el logro de un desarrollo sostenible y la reducción del riesgo de desastres. De cara a la definición de objetivos, metas e indicadores que consideren la importancia del cambio climático y el manejo del riesgo de desastres y resiliencia, México y Perú abogan porque las mismas se vean reflejadas en su naturaleza transversal a lo largo del nuevo marco de objetivos de desarrollo. Es preciso señalar que en este esfuerzo no partimos de cero. Hay un importante trabajo previo en diversas consultas que han sido conducidas en parte por la Secretaría de Naciones Unidas para la Reducción de Desastres. En estos procesos, como documentos que se han elaborado, como la evaluación global o Global Assessment Reports on DDR de los años 2009, 2011 y 2013, son en sí una importante guía de conocimientos e información que los estados deberíamos tener en cuenta en este proceso. En esta línea, un nuevo set de objetivos y metas que reflejen la resiliencia y la gestión del riesgo de desastres debe ser elaborado a partir de la experiencia obtenida en la implementación de los 22 indicadores utilizados para implementar a su vez las 5 áreas priorizadas en el marco de acción de Hyogo. A manera de ejemplo de la importancia de la interrelación existente entre el cambio climático y la gestión del riesgo de desastres, queremos destacar la importancia del vínculo entre género y cambio climático, porque existen impactos diferenciados entre mujeres y hombres, y reconocemos que las soluciones en adaptación y en mitigación deben incorporar la dimensión económica, tanto social como ambiental, integrando a las mujeres en los procesos de cambio. Copresidente, ante la magnitud de los retos que tenemos por delante, el Perú y México proponen una aproximación práctica, realista, basada en una lógica de solución a estos acuciantes problemas. Y esa es la política que vamos a seguir en el marco de estos 3 procesos que hemos mencionado. Muchas gracias.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Peru for his statement. And maybe very short period of time left for us, just enough one more statement. I'd like to invite China to do that on behalf of her country, Indonesia and Kazakhstan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair, for giving me the last slot for making statement. It's a great honor to speak on behalf of the TRUCA.
of China, Indonesia, and Kazakhstan on the item climate change and disaster risk reduction. And China, Indonesia, and Kazakhstan support the statement made by Bolivia on behalf of G77 and China. Climate change is a common challenge for us all, with a bearing on the future of humankind and the development of all countries. Therefore, the international community should address and respond to this challenge collectively, guided by the principles of equity and common but differentiated responsibilities in the framework of sustainable development. Developed countries should take concrete measures to step up their actions according to historical responsibilities and take the lead in reducing emissions adequately and provide adequate financial, technical, and capacity building support to developing countries to help them with their action to address climate change. In this way, international cooperation to climate change will be further strengthened. Climate change is an issue that has emerged in the course of development and therefore can and should be addressed through development. Consequently, a proper response to climate change will promote sustainable development, while the realization of sustainable development in turn will further enhance the capacity to deal with climate change. These two endeavors are mutually reinforcing instead of conflicting with one another. Therefore, it is advisable not to focus on one endeavor alone at the cost of ignoring the other. We have placed high importance to responding to climate change and actively worked to explore effective ways to properly address the interconnection between measures to combat climate change and the overall action for sustainable development. The government of China, Indonesia, and Kazakhstan have incorporated the reduction of greenhouse gases emission as a mandatory target in national development plans. We have worked vigorously on promoting energy conservation and efficiency, develop renewable energy, step up forestation, and strive for low carbon development, and will continue to do so in the future. We also have developed adaptation strategy to help people in the vulnerable area prone to climate impact. We will take a highly responsible attitude for long-term human development by actively participating in the negotiations for agreement to be reached in 2015. We are also committed to promote international cooperation so as to make our due contribution to the international collective action to address climate change. Mr. Co-Chair, recent years have seen the aggregate impact of climate change and the frequent occurrence of disasters and catastrophes across the globe. Disaster reduction has gained increasing attention of all countries. The report of the Secretary General shows that some 310 massive natural disasters in 2012 had claimed about 9,300 lives, affected 1.06 billion people, and inflicted economic loss totaling approximately US$138 billion. Indonesia has experienced in dealing with disaster since the Aceh tsunami in 2004 and has developed disaster policy response, which consists of emergency actions, rehabilitation, and reconstructions. Disaster preparedness action also have been applied all over Indonesia regions. And now an adverse impact of climate change is also in the process to be linked to the disaster policy response. Therefore, adaptation and preparedness to the adverse impact of climate change should also be part of disaster policy response. Against the backdrop of globalization, international cooperation should be intensified to prevent and adequately respond to natural disasters. The international community, and developed countries in particular, should increase material and technical assistance to disaster-affected developing countries and help them build their capabilities of disaster prevention, preparedness, and reduction. The track of China, Indonesia, and Kazakhstan places high importance on disaster prevention and reduction and will actively participate in bilateral and multilateral disaster relief cooperation and activities to the best of our capabilities. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
I thank the distinguished representative of China for her statement. And dear colleague, we have come to the end of the afternoon. General interactive exchange of views on climate change and disaster risk reduction. I'd like to thank all of you who contributed to the discussions, brought ideas to our common benefit. tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, we shall convene with the representative of the civil society and major groups. Yet again, I'd like to encourage all of you to consider to join them. Very interesting discussion every morning. At 10 o'clock, the open working group will reconvene in the same room here, in the same chamber, for the interactive panel discussion under the same subject, same title, climate change and disaster risk reduction, to be followed by an interactive exchange of views. Time permitting, after that, we can carry on with the prepared statements. Unless any other willingness is to take the floor on an urgent matter, this meeting is adjourned.